Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Christian Trebing, who will give the presentation Getting Control of Your Workflows with Apache Airflow. Please welcome the speaker.
Hey, thank you. Welcome to my talk. Yeah, what is the motivation behind this, getting control of your workflows? Imagine you are a data-driven company, you have several customers, you get data from them each night, and this data wants to be processed. That's what your customers pay you money for. This processing happens, and it is done in separate steps. So for example, you have to book that data, so you have to validate that your customer has sent you correct data. You do some machine learning, and you do some predictions, you do some decisions on the basis of your machine learning results. If errors happen, you want to get an overview on what happened and when. So for example, did your customer not send your data, did some machine learning get wrong, or did your decision-taking algorithm miss some data? And as you might already have guessed, you have a tight schedule, so you don't have lots of time because it's a tight time window each night where you need to process your data. What options do you have to solve that issue? So the first and most simple solution, and most engineers directly come to that, and it's a good start, is doing it with cron. So this works from start, it's fine, you say we get normally until midnight, we get the data from the customer, so we start our booking half an hour later. Then we know it takes about an hour, so better plan for some spare time, so 2 hours after that you do some predictions, and then let's say at further 1 or 2 hours you do the decision taking. So you can't just do time triggers, you plan some spare time between that, and you cannot define any dependency between your jobs if you do this with cron. Also, the error handling is hard. So when one job fails, you have to look in the logs for that job. You have to know where the log is. If you have some customer support or the shifter who's there for that night, he might know one of this part in detail, but the other ones he might have to search for. So that's really inconvenient if you are in a support situation. But now let's say your timeline even gets more dense. So either you have more data, which needs longer to process, or you need to be finished more early. What can you do? Well, you see there are these gaps between there, and well, that's quite fine. You could pack it more dense. You could start everything half an hour earlier. Why waste all that time before waiting on that? So then something gets wrong. Your database has a load from another job or something else. It's more data than you expected. You see this overlap, and your whole pipeline crashes between the predict, which wants to start here, expects the data from the book data, but that's not finished yet, so it just fails with an error. You have to search the logs, and yeah, that's very inconvenient. So cron is great for a first start when you want to see, okay, I don't have that big requirements for that, but in the end, you quickly come into the situations I described here. So what is the next step? It's a quite natural one. Well, it's so simple, just adding that dependency. I can write my own tool. I'm so intelligent. I have so much experience. It should not take longer than 2 days. We went that path several times in several projects. We had several different implementations. Each had its advantages and disadvantages. And we see every time, well, the start is easy. You get to 80% quickly, but then you see what is missing. You reach the limits and you have to decide on whether to proceed with that or whether to do something different. Well, there are just some ideas when you have concurrent jobs, when you need to know what happened, when you need a nice UI, some interfaces also for testing that. So these are all things which you do not think of when you first start your project with that. Also, one other thing, for us at Blue Yonder as a data science company, we had already some nice data workflow tools, and we thought about, well, why not use them for that? And Well, I just want to make you aware of this is a different problem scenario we are talking about here. So when we have these data workflow solutions, also was in the Beam talk just before my talk here. And they are great when you want to move data from one step to the other, when you have pipelines that are changing on behalf of the data, when you have massive parallelization and the pipeline might look different, the concrete instantiation every time. That's not what we are talking here in the workflow space. So in this workflow space, we say the pipeline looks the same, nearly the same at least. It changes, you can say, as much as the database scheme changes. So it is possible, but it's not that it's every night a different one. And you have different people working on that. So here for the workflow space, we are talking about you more have also the customer support, the project people looking on that, what went in which course steps, and it's not that fine-grained steps as you have in the data processing pipeline. So that's just to keep your expectations right about that too. So they're both data pipeline tools and workflow processing tools. They are different sets of use cases. They are both great for the things they are designed with, but you should be aware that these two different scenarios exist. So, after seeing cron doesn't work and writing our own stuff quickly leads to dead ends, we decided to use an open source workflow processing tool because there are so many intelligent people who have gone through the pain we also will surely go through in the next months. So why not take advantage of that? And that's also, I think, the reason why so many of you are here, because we all know that it's great to use the intelligence of so many people from the open source projects. We evaluated multiple ones, and we decided for Airflow. That's also because of technical requirements. So we saw many great tools that used, for example, HDFS as a backend, which we had not running at the company. So this, we did not use that. And also we saw many tools that more had an emphasis on setup of systems. That's also not what we needed, but what we needed was more an orchestration tool. And this is the use case which really Airflow was a great fit, and I will explain why in the next slides. What were the concrete ideas for that? In Airflow, we write all the workflow definitions in Python, and as we use Python for many parts in our company, that's something we feel comfortable with. It's a great language, and it has many of these features which I explained just 5 minutes ago. So it has you can view the present and the past runs, you have some logging features, so you cannot just see what is running now or what was the last run, but you can also compare on how did it run last week or the last month. You can write your own extensions, which is important because you do not have to do a fork when you say, I have something that's very specific for my company, for my use case. I don't think this makes sense to add this to the standard branch, but I know this is very specific for me. I don't want to fork, so I want to make advantage of all upgrades that I can do to versions, and there's a separate point where I can do my own extensions. That's great. It's under active development. It's an incubator project, so we also see that there's much of the things happening, and not all is there yet, but we are confident that this really goes in a very good direction, and also are willing to invest also in this. It has a nice UI, and no REST interface at the moment, but you can do this as an extension for that. And it's also relatively lightweight. It doesn't have big dependencies. It's just two processes and some database which you need. But I will also go into detail on that later. How does a workflow in Airflow look like? As I said, it's Python code. There is some generic boilerplate, for example, here these arguments which you do at first. But there's also on the roadmap for Airflow to make this boilerplate code vanishing, that you have a better defaulting for that. So you can see you have here a naming, you have a schedule interval, which you can do in cron syntax. Airflow has the possibility to start stuff automatically, so on a time schedule, but you also have the possibility to trigger a workflow manually when you say, out of order, I want to process this a second time or at an earlier point in time. So the main definitions are here, where you say, I have three steps. I want to book the data, I want to do some predictions, and I want to do some decisions. So these are all operators. And you define the relation by that also in code that you have here, set upstream book, which means this should run before that, and set upstream predict, which means this should run before that. So it's quite a simple linear graph here. And that was for us the first point to start. So our workflows were mostly simple at the moment, and it's great that this handles that in an easy way, but it's also there's much power behind that so that you can extend it further. Next step is you can have also a diamond shape. You can have fan in and fan out, which looks that way. So let's say I might have two prediction steps. One is specific for Germany and one is specific for the UK. And after both are finished, I want to do my decision step. So this is also you implement, you instantiate the operators and you set the upstream in that way. So how does that look like on the UI? And I mean, UI is something also we at first think, well, it's a nice thing to have, but it mostly comes second. But we saw that's really important to have a good adoption of your of the stuff you are doing, so to make it really easy for people to have a look at that and to understand what happens. So how does the Airflow UI look like? There's an overview of what workflows you have. So each workflow to have the terminology is a DAG, a directed acyclic graph. And I see I have three workflows defined, my data booking, my daily processing, and that example diamond shape. And you can see here what tasks are executed. The green ones, the dark green ones are the ones that were successful, and the light green ones are the ones that are currently processing. So this gives you a good view of what is currently happening. You can dive into that and you can see for every run itself what steps were already done. So this is here directly at the start of the run and it will get the different colors as it proceeds. You can have, as I already promised, you have a view of the past. So you can see what happened when. So I had several instances running on several days here, July 17th and the 19th, and I can see here they were all green, but I see in the last one, this yellow step that is on retry at the moment, and this is for the predict. So by that way, you get a good overview. And you can have also a view of your run times of your several steps over sometimes, so that's helpful for us to see, for example, a performance degradation. When steps get slower and slower, then you can have a good view here whether that's steady or whether there's some step in that, and then you can have a look what changed at that point in time. Also, Gantt charts are sometimes helpful to see in a more graphical way on when things were done. What's for an understanding's point of view very helpful is that you can have a log at the operators. And these operators, like the decision, the prediction, the booking, you can define that in that how they log. So they do not necessarily give you all the machine learning output. You can find that in the logs of your machine learning stuff. But you can do that on a more coarse-grained level so that also people who are not that deep in the technical detail can understand what happened there. And this you can directly access in the UI and to see the output what happened. So now having seen that we have a UI, that we can clump all that steps together, how can we define the steps? This is done with the operators, and their Airflow already has many operators out of the box. You can execute bash scripts, you can call HTTP endpoints, you can do stuff on the database, either on Postgres or on SQLite. And you can do stuff directly in Python. You can send emails. Also, you can send Slack messages. So there's many things in there, and this is growing. And it's not only that we have operators, we also have sensors. Sensors are special operators that wait for things. So for example, it can wait that the HTTP endpoint returns some value, it can wait for some files available on HDFS, or it can wait until some SQL statement returns a value or not. So that gives you a possibility beneath your time triggering of your workflows, also inside that workflow, to wait for specific events to happen. So that's great, but sometimes you want more. So for example, I said we use that for orchestration of our processes, and our processes, we start them asynchronously on other servers. So let's say the prediction algorithm, it runs on a specific cluster. We have an HTTP endpoint where we trigger that cluster, where we trigger the prediction step, we get a job ID back, and we can then poll this prediction cluster on whether the job is finished or not. It would be able, I could do this with a simple HTTP operator and the sensor, so starting that and waiting for that. That would also work, but what we did not like about this is we would lose the context of that. So I showed some steps, some slides back, that we can see the runtime of the prediction step. And this is something that's very nice to see. And if we move this logic to several operators, we would lose that context. But it is possible to define a new operator with this extension mechanism. And in this operator, we can implement that we get a job ID back and that we wait for that job ID. That's something so specific that it's not possible to do this in a generic operator because it depends on how your prediction server returns the result, on how to pass that job ID and how to query that. But it's possible to write an own operator for that. That's relatively lightweight. I just give you the example code here. I won't go through it line by line. But you can see that we have an HTTP connection that we can define in the Airflow. So it's not in code, but it's really in an Airflow database then. We have two different endpoints, and we can, on execution, we post something to the decide endpoint, we get back a job ID, and we then wait until the job finished. And when it gets finished, that's fine, and we can return that it's done. Or also, when there's some timeout, we could throw an Airflow exception, and then we could see that this has taken too much time. So that's fine. We do that for our main processing steps, and we also have some sharing of projects in our company for that we use these operators. But especially when you write some tests, when you have workflows that do just one specific thing, maybe you do not want to write a new operator for that. And Airflow gives you much flexibility that directly in your workflow definition you can say there is a Python operator and I want to do just a simple thing and you can just dynamically give that Python operator here a callable in Python and you can do you can write your arbitrary Python code just above. That's great, but you should be aware of dependencies that come with that. Because you can execute, you can have many executors for your workflows, and you may need to make sure that on each node where you execute stuff, all the Python dependencies are also present. Otherwise, you will, well, maybe just realize it too late. Okay, that's it for the operators. One other thing that you might miss at the first when you do some, when you design such a workflow system and think everything is easy, is state handling. I said that Airflow and workflow processing is not about moving data, big chunks of data back and forth, but nevertheless, you mostly have some state also within your workflows where you need to react on stuff, and there we really like the concept how Airflow does this. We have variables that are saved globally for an Airflow instance, so that's the same for all workflows. And we have the XCOMs that are like variables that are specific for a specific instance of a workflow. These two are persisted in database tables, so also they do not get lost when your scheduler crashes and needs to be restarted. I provided one example, so to see when to use what and what you can do in combination with these both. So let's say we require for many of our steps our central database where the stuff is stored, And we need to make sure that only one job goes to the database, so to provide that all things are done in a consistent way. So each block of operators needs to reserve the database, and we want to make sure that these operators do not collide on that. What's the solution we used here with Airflow is for each task block, before we start that, we request a lock on the database, and after it finished, we want to release that lock. That's fine, that lock can be a variable. The thing where we need more logic is we always want to return the lock, even if some operator in between crashed, but we only want to return the lock if we acquired it. So as it is a variable, we could for sure just set resources free, but if we did not acquire it at first, it would be bad for the other jobs. So therefore, you can see here we have some global variable, that's the database lock, and we have our different workflows, and what they do is they try to acquire the lock. If yes, they say, well, I acquired it in that workflow, and if I come here to the end, I check, did I acquire the lock, and if yes, I return it. It might be that here I run into a timeout, I'm not able to acquire the lock, then I jump directly here to the end, and I see, well, I didn't acquire it, everything's fine, let the other job finish and release it for himself. Also here you see that. You can say, here this predict and decide workflow also it acquires it first, it releases at end, it does this locally, so the memory on when did I acquire it or not, and globally, they all communicate via that variable. So with this, you have a great mechanism to store data locally for a workflow instance and globally for communication between all instances. Okay, there's a further thing that might be interesting for you. So based on stuff that happened in your workflow, for example, we have sometimes the case data from the customer arrives late, or specific data from the customer arrives late, and we have workarounds for that. So maybe you can use the data from last day if the data arrived late. In some cases, this is possible. And you can do some branching in your workflows based on that. So if some time trigger is missed, I still can do the other branch and have a reduced model running. To do that, you can implement the branching here. You can do that in Python, and you can also implement this decision logic in Python. So let's say here a simple example on a on weekends, I run a different operator as on normal days, the other days of the week. Then I can have here this decide and decide weekend. They both depend on the check weekday. And the thing that's special about the check weekday is that it's a branch operator, so not both of them are executed. But here you can just check, I get the day of the week, if it's 5 or 6, so Saturday or Sunday in Python, then you do the decide weekend, otherwise you do the decide. So with that, you can also define a complex workflows with state and with decisions between them. As I said, already... I should be more calm, so... Okay. Sorry for that. Maybe... Yes, maybe I just do this in between, then it's fine. Okay, as I said, we have that plugin concept that you can introduce your own code. This you can do for the operators, as I've shown. This you can do for Python blueprints. So these you can do to extend the interface or also to extend the UI. And you define a Python package with all the stuff in between in there, and you can, in the Airflow configuration, which is just an ini file on start of Airflow, you can say the path to that plugin. How does this look like? It's quite simple. You have a base Airflow plugin. You can define your own plugin. You give it a name, and you say what operators are included and what blueprints do you have in there. And by that, you really have everything that Airflow on startup it checks through all the plugins, and it adds this to its standard set of operators, and you can use your new operators in your DAX. The definition of own blueprints, it extends the Airflow web server. As I said, Airflow has two processes. One process is the web server, the other process is the scheduler. And this directly goes into the web server. It adds that at the same point as it has its standard delivered views. And yeah, you can define your additional endpoints. We use that, for example, that we have an Airflow, that we have an endpoint to trigger a DAG, and that we check for the state of a DAG run. In a production setup, this all is triggered by on a timely basis, and it can be triggered manually. But where we really take advantage of that is in our testing. So we have some automated tests set up, so end-to-end tests that also start these Airflow runs. And so within our code, we can directly access that endpoint. We can trigger a DAG run, and we can check whether this is finished, and then evaluate our test results. So for that, this really helps us. For that, I did not put the code in here, as it is too long to understand in that short time frame. But in the end, I gave the link to a Git repo where I put together some examples on that, and you can have a look directly there. So how does this look like in our testing so that you get an idea of that? Let's imagine it runs on standard on localhost 8080. You can say we have the trigger endpoint with a daily processing DAG, and then I start that, I get back a run ID, and then I can check for that run ID directly here in a REST style and get the meta information about that run. And I see here it's still running, so I pull a minute later and see whether it's finished. So what happens inside? I said the good thing is that it's relatively lightweight, so a scheduler, a web server, and a database. It supports several database backends. What we are using is Postgres for the production setup. And if you have just a small test instance, we say we directly use an SQLite that has some restrictions about that no parallel, no concurrent processes are possible. But in our test setup, that works fine. And so that's an easy way to set this up. For the execution of the tasks, you also have several possibilities. So the most easy one is a sequential executor that is within the scheduler process. So the scheduler, it blocks until the task is being done. But for a test setup, that's fine. You have a local executor with some subprocesses, which runs then always on the same machine. And you can use Celery, which is a widespread Python framework to start tasks on many machines. To have also, if you have more resource-intensive workers, to start that on many machines. So we use it, as I said, we have automatic triggers and manual triggers. What we discussed initially before starting Airflow is how many Airflow instances do we want to have. So Airflow has also a rudimentary tenant concept, well, at least that you can have authentication and then that you can have for several users several different workflows. But we decided to start the Airflow instance per customer system that we manage. Idea behind that is also you define these workflows as code. You define them in a Python package. And when we change that workflow for a customer, we need to upload a new Python package. And this is just more convenient when we do that on a per-customer instance as one company-wide instance. Yeah, as I said, databases, we use both. And we use the lightweight executors as we only trigger HTTP requests. For that, we use it for orchestration and not for resource-intense calculations. So I'm nearing the end of my talk, but I want to share with you the things I would have liked to know before, because they had caused us some headaches to understand. So this is a great tool, and it's also a consistent one, but it's not always directly, you cannot always directly see what is the motivation behind that. So this all works fine, but it helps to know this explicitly. Also, there's on the Airflow wiki, there's a special section about pitfalls. I've also put that at the end so you can have a look at them for yourself. But the two ones that cost us some headaches, I will explain here. So each Airflow instance has each instance of a workflow has an execution date and a start date. So the start date is really the date when the workflow starts. So the timestamp of the server when it started. The execution date, well, it sounds the same, but it's more like a description. It's when this should be executed. And for that, you need to know that Airflow at the beginning for Airbnb, where this originated, was done for ETL tasks. So extract, transform, load. And this was at the end of a day, I start to process my data. So this means when now it's the 16th of November, I can process the date for the 15th of November because the 16th is not finished yet. I cannot do that. So therefore, Airflow always, from our point of view, does this one iteration too late because now it's the 16th, but we use as execution date the 15th. It works fine. All is running, but you need to know it. You need to explain it to the people who might be confused by the execution date, as this is quite prominent in the UI and in everything you do with Airflow. And it has a backfill, a start time, and a backfill. So the idea, as I said, is ETL scenarios, and you do not want to miss one day of your ETL scenario. So this means you define a start date, and this workflow is, let's say, it starts on the 10th of November, and if Airflow recognizes now it's the 16th of November, and the Airflow server starts, and it has done no tasks up until now, it will do all the work for the last days also. So starting with the 10th, the 11th, 12th, until the 16th. This is great for ETL scenario, but it was not great for our scenario where we just wanted to do the current time. But you can get around with that if you define your start date at the right thing. So as we see, the execution date is always one iteration back, so we need to set it one iteration back. So with that, also that works fine, but it's something that took us some time to come to that solution. So that's it for the things in my talk. If you want to dig deeper here, that's the GitHub repo of Airflow. It also has documentation, which you can find here, the common pitfalls, and the example of the code from my talk.
Any questions?
When deploying this, do you have a single instance? I'm thinking about failures on the server, on the scheduler. Do you have a redundancy option, or do you maybe use another tool to restart it?
Yeah, we use some other tool. A colleague of mine yesterday gave a talk about Aurora and Mesos. So this is the infrastructure where we run our Airflow processes on, and they take care that failing processes are restarted. Because of that, it's important for us that the scheduler information and all these variables, they are persisted to the database, and when it's restarted on a different node, it still has all the data.
Thank you.
This probably does not match your use case, but when you first design a workflow, is there any facility to let you know what processes are expected to be executed on what nodes? Let's leave out branching for a moment.
Sorry, I didn't get the question.
Okay. In our world, one of the use cases we have is that people will be designing many different workflows, mm-hmm. calling many different systems. Sometimes it would be a very good idea for these people to know in advance what was going to be run on what nodes. Do you have anything like that?
No, it's not in there. As I would get it, it's something more like a simulation.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, no, it's not in here. And also, when you say on different nodes, I mean, if you run this on multiple nodes, it's not done, it has no prediction to the future on what node it would run.
I see.
They will be chosen on availability.
Okay, thank you.
Security, mm-hmm. Do you have any insights on that? Because, for example, we use Uzi, mm-hmm. and we have to do everything in Kerberos. So Uzi and Kerberos kind of work, What about Airflow?
I mean, there are different aspects to that. I can just tell you the stuff I know about the Airflow security. On the one hand, you can define, well, users that have access to different workflows, to the information on that workflows. This is the thing for people going onto Airflow. The other thing is the connectivity to the other systems. So you can define in Airflow connections to other systems, and you can then reference them. So on setup of Airflow, you can enter that connection information, and you can also save this in an encrypted way. And for each workflow itself, it just says, use the connection to the decision server. And then it queries that, and it decrypts the password of that decision server and accesses it with this.
It doesn't have, like, the user that set up the workflow is passed on to the workflow, and that itself is passed on to the Yarn server, for example.
Mm-hmm. And not directly. I think it would be possible to implement, but it's in the hand of the implementer of the workflow to make sure that this happens.
Do you know where Airflow stands on high availability and Kerberos integration?
For Kerberos integration, I don't know, but I would have to check on the website by myself. For high availability, well, for us, we use it with that way that we can restart the scheduler processes when we see it fails. What we have done is we have implemented a health check so that the server is still alive, and then Aurora and Mesos do the rescheduling when this health check fails. So it's not in Airflow itself, but in our infrastructure where we run that.
And in the same way in Kerberos, do you try to connect to high available servers, like HDFS in availability or high
utilization model? We did not have the use case up to now.
Let's say I have workflow of five tasks, and it runs, and the four tasks succeeded, and the last one fails. Mm-hmm. Do I have any option to rerun only the last task?
Mm-hmm. You have yes and no. So what you can do is you define retry possibilities for each for a task and for the task in a workflow, and also the retry intervals. But it's not possible to, at least not with the web UI, to restart the task. On the one hand, you have the possibility via the command line, or what I would do in that case, at least if I know that several of where the points where this could break are, then I would define a separate workflow that where I can repeat that special task. Or you have idempotent tasks so that you know you can run the complete workflow. But it's not possible to step in step 4 of 7 and start it from there. But it's a nice idea. We'd have to see how much this is required and whether it makes sense to extend it in that way.
What if the Airflow server goes down at the fourth step of this five-step workflow, mm-hmm. and it comes back up later on another node? Mm-hmm. Does it pick up the workflow where it left off, or it has to be restarted?
It picks up the workflow on where it has left. So on every entering and finishing a task, it writes its state to the database. So when it goes down, it knows where it left.
Just curious, did you look at Luigi?
Yes.
And why went for Airflow instead of Luigi?
Yeah. We had a look at Luigi, and the Luigi is based on HDFS and depends on that heavily. And as we do not have that in our landscape at the moment, it did not make sense for us. So therefore, we did not have a deeper investigation on that.
You told about the evaluation of other frameworks. Which ones did you evaluate?
Well. As I said, we had a look at Luigi. We also had a look at OpenStack frameworks, which had two. But these were, they put many effort in how to lift heavyweight tasks and how to do a system setup. And this was something which we did not depend on. We were more looking into the UI and simple understanding features, and there Airflow more exceeded. And then there were many frameworks we see that were more data flow tools that had a heavy aspect on passing data around, and this was also not in our scope. So this was the spectrum we had to look at.
This is actually not a question, but since I'm really interested in this, I booked the Birds of a Feather room at 6 p.m. today on Nervian, Arena 1. And I would like to invite anyone that wants to join, you probably, because I think that's when we get to start using this stuff in production, lots of issues that arise are really not discussed out in the open, and we're really having a lot of hard time, for example, using Uzi with Kerberos and stuff like running catch-ups and stuff, and even choosing the right workflow. So if anyone wants to discuss about that, it's at 6 p.m. on 6:15. Yeah, 6:15 on Nervian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's right.
Sorry.
So unfortunately, I myself only booked for the big data conference, not for the Apache Con. So I won't be there this evening. But I'm really happy to give you some input on that, so that you can use that in the session this evening.
Any further question? No? Then thanks again to the speaker.